A knowing wink from an Irish entrepreneur selling phone credit as currency at a Vegas fintech conference captures something profound about money itself. When Zimbabwean users text airtime codes as payment instead of topping up their minutes, what are they really doing? The entrepreneur's apologetic wink says it all. This isn't quite money, but it works like money, so does the distinction even matter? We've lived with these almost money objects since Neolithic farmers pressed clay shapes to represent grain stores. Ancient Athenians used tokens for voting and jury duty. Today's digital landscape explodes with new variations: Twitch bits, NFTs, smart contracts, gift cards functioning as wages. These aren't aberrations or tech fads. They're the latest chapter in humanity's long, complicated relationship with value itself. What makes our moment unique is how platforms like Amazon, Facebook, and blockchain networks are reshaping this relationship, often in ways that concentrate power rather than distribute it. The question isn't whether tokens will transform our economy. They already have. The question is who controls them and what that means for the rest of us. After the 2008 crash, universities began paying adjunct lecturers with Amazon gift cards instead of wages, transforming compensation into a bit of cheer, turning what workers were owed into a favor. For platforms, the benefits are clear: no employment contracts, minimal tax obligations, and complete control over where money gets spent. Amazon pays non-US Mechanical Turk workers exclusively in gift cards, essentially modern script, the company store currency outlawed generations ago but quietly returned in the gig economy. Twitch streamers receive bits from viewers. $1.40 buys 100, but streamers only get $1 worth, with Amazon pocketing the difference while framing transactions as chat messages with enhanced clout rather than labor payments. These tokens exist in a deliberately ambiguous zone between payment, donation, gift, and bribe. They allow platforms to monetize activities difficult to commercialize directly: chatting, forming relationships, existing in someone's digital presence. Amazon wish lists blur performance and authenticity, mixing costumes with glimpses into streamers' real lives. Tokens mark economic boundaries where markets shade from legitimate to gray to black, operating where direct payment would be illegal. A COVID-era taxi driver sanitizes my change, returning a soggy 5-euro note that haunts my wallet for weeks. Money carries traces of hands and histories, a stickiness connecting to ancient systems like Papua New Guinea's kula shells, which gained value through circulation stories. Today's tokens don't just carry traces, they record everything. Venmo transformed payments into social performance. Until 2021, its public feed displayed transactions. Artist Hang Do T Duck's Public by Default showed how Venmo's API could reconstruct detailed profiles, couples, dealers, affairs, through transaction patterns. This represents a fundamental shift from earning transaction fees to monetizing data itself. Credit has always been social, but as communities expanded, formal scoring emerged. Louis Tappan, bankrupted in 1837, established the Mercantile Agency to quantify creditworthiness. By the 1870s, surveillance expanded to consumers, marking surveillance capitalism's dawn. Today's AI systems like Zest AI analyzed 10,000 data points per customer, social media, browsing, friend networks. Despite objectivity claims, they perpetuate historical biases. The 1990s Cypherpunk Forum warned that a government-run cashless society will be worse than Orwell's worst. Central bank digital currencies threaten money with memory, where nothing is forgotten. Both governments and platforms push cashless societies. Platforms want data and fees. States pursue security and tax compliance. Cash remains the last blind spot in transactional surveillance. In 1980s Ireland, the government issued butter vouchers to welfare recipients with strict instructions: butter only. Shopkeepers accepted them for bread, eggs, cigarettes, even alcohol. This gap between policy and practice exemplifies James C. Scott's Weapons of the Week: Subtle Resistance Navigating Control Systems. Smart tokens encode restrictions directly, eliminating social negotiation. Modern SNAP cards enable authorities to identify, track, and take action against unapproved uses. Programmable money fuses reputation, authentication, and AI to create tokens with memory that make decisions about users, environmental compliance, welfare conditions, geographic restrictions. Unlike cash, tokens often link to identity. Historical foundling tokens helped mothers reclaim children from 18th century orphanages. Modern programmable tokens eliminate separation between identity and bearer. The World Food Program's iris scanning payment system connects biometrics to bank accounts, while WorldCoin combines iris scans with digital currency for potential universal basic income. Who controls programmable money? When Tencent's QQ gaming tokens threatened China's yuan, the People's Bank intervened. When Facebook announced Libra in 2019, it positioned itself as a super app comparable to WeChat Pay, openly stating its intent to shape a regulatory environment rather than conform, a concentration of power called Silicon Valley feudalism. The fundamental question remains: will programmable tokens and identities be created by accountable governments, profit-driven corporations, or decentralized systems controlled by users? In a former colonial Dublin bank, hacker Jeremel believed the 2008 crash had broken the taboo on money, revealing its constructed nature. Early Bitcoin advocates envisioned money as a commons, shared resources managed collectively beyond state or market, where power could decentralize from banks to people through peer-to-peer networks. Bitcoin initially seemed to extend the digital commons vision of Wikipedia and open-source software. However, the junction where free culture meets free market created ambiguity. Were these systems truly anti-capitalist or just refined capitalism? Despite Bitcoin's promise of peer-to-peer exchange, the peers aren't individual people but nodes of computational power. New intermediaries quickly emerged: wallets, clearinghouses, mining operations. The we became concentrated in those with mining power, predominantly white, male, tech-savvy, perpetuating existing power structures. What if we designed money differently? Silvio Gesell proposed demurrage, currency that would rot like other commodities, taxing hoarding to keep money circulating. In 2013, Payu Harris envisioned MazaCoin as a path to indigenous sovereignty. Despite initial attention, MazaCoin faltered, echoing how colonial settlers misunderstood wampum shells, treating them as simple currency when they were actually part of complex gift economies, then mass-producing them to buy land never meant to be sold. Day trading exploded during COVID, fueled by fee-free apps like Robinhood, profiting from user data, social media influencers, and economic desperation. Millennials and Gen Z, facing debt and precarious employment, began YOLOing rent money, hoping to win enough for a down payment. The 2021 GameStop short squeeze emerged from Reddit's r/WallStreetBets, where users coordinated to buy heavily shorted stock. Led by Roaring Kitty, retail investors drove shares from under $3 to $483, forcing hedge funds into a squeeze until Robinhood controversially halted trading. This revealed how memes could be hedged like commodities, with values driven by hype rather than fundamentals. Enrique Duran executed a different exploit. Between 2005-2008, he defrauded Spanish banks of $492,000 through 68 small loans, redirecting funds to Catalan cooperative movements. His civil disobedience coincided with the 2008 crisis, giving his actions new resonance. The Robinhood Miner Asset Management Cooperative emerged in 2013 as a hedge fund requiring only $30 buy-in. Using an algorithm called the Parasite, it mimicked Wall Street's most successful funds, splitting profits between shareholders and common fare, social centers, basic income, interest-free loans. Despite revolutionary rhetoric, managing director Jan Ritsema resigned, criticizing the commercial approach and alleged hiding of poor returns. Like GameStop, Robinhood revealed how difficult it is to challenge financial systems without being absorbed by their logic. Money relies on trust in government-issued tokens and community acceptance. Cryptocurrency advocates believed code could replace this human trust. Bitcoin emerged during an institutional trust crisis, offering a trustless system requiring faith only in code, introducing blockchain, a shared, time-stamped public ledger. In 2014, Ethereum expanded capabilities with smart contracts, executing functions automatically, enabling decentralized autonomous organizations, DAOs, for governance without human intermediaries. Bitcoin's foundations emerged from two 1990s mailing lists, Cypherpunk, cryptography as privacy tool, and Extropian, using technology to transcend human limitations. Founders envisioned anarchy as rules without rulers. The blockchain solved Leslie Lamport's Byzantine generals problem, reaching consensus without established trust through public key encryption and proof of work. The June 2016 DAO hack became defining. When a hacker drained $50 million worth of Ether exploiting a vulnerability, the community questioned, if code was law, was the technically feasible exploit legitimate? After heated debate, the majority voted to hard fork the blockchain, erasing the hack. Despite promises to replace human governance with protocols, messy human politics remained essential. Code was law only until it wasn't. Ibrahim Mahama's Outside of Borders installation covered Venice Biennale walls with 300 repurposed jute sacks from Ghana, objects that once transported cocoa and coal, now telling stories of colonial extraction and value flowing from periphery to center. Tokens have always transformed physical assets into liquid value. Mesopotamian grain tokens stored in clay balls. Yap Island's immovable rye stones transferred ownership through oral ledgers. Even when one sank underwater, it kept functioning because everyone agreed it existed somewhere. The Federal Reserve moves gold between governments without physically relocating it, just as art collectors trade works stored in tax-free ports they'll never visit. Blockchain enables fine art to be fractionally owned like company shares. Macy Ness tokenized 31% of Andy Warhol's 14 small electric chairs, valued at $5.6 million. Unlike NFTs, these tokens represent legal ownership in physical assets, even if investors never see their fraction of a painting. After Brexit, dealer Stefan Simchoritz argued art functions as an alternative currency that hedges against inflation. High-net-worth individuals increasingly invest in passion assets divorced from actual pleasure. Freeports, high-security warehouses in offshore enclaves, store valuable works tax-free. Geneva's Freeport alone reportedly houses 1.2 million works, including 1,000 Picassos. Art transforms from public good to financial instrument locked away from human eyes. Unlike artists who publicly deny the market while profiting from it, Mahama reinvests profits into community projects. In 2019, he acquired an abandoned grain silo in Ghana to create the Savannah Center for Contemporary Art, what he calls Resurrection. This embodies an anti-Freeport logic, returning things to their rightful place, reconnecting tokens with the physical and social worlds they represent. In a world increasingly mediated by tokens, from bits we send streamers to fractional Picassos we'll never see, we face a choice. Will tokens become tools for freedom and shared prosperity, or more sophisticated mechanisms for extraction and control? The answer lies not in the technology itself, but in who shapes it and who benefits. Money has always been a social technology, a collective agreement about value and trust. The question is whether our new tokens will expand that circle of trust or shrink it, whether they'll distribute power or concentrate it, whether they'll help us build communities or just more efficient ways to be alone together in our digital shitholes.